Hello, I'm Becky Bees, Vice President of Marketing and Community Life at Roland Park Place, Baltimore's only metropolitan senior living experience. You're listening to a valuable perspective, stories, advice, and reflections from some of the city's most knowledgeable and worldly citizens, the residents who call Roland Park Place their home. The State Department represents our country in all international affairs and foreign policy issues. My guest today is Dick Springer, a resident of Roland Park Place since 2010, who served in the State Department for more than 20 years. Mr. Springer discusses the role of the diplomat and the evolution of the State Department. Mr. Springer, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Mr. Springer, you were an officer for the U.S. Department of State for more than 20 years and served in posts all over the world, from Bolivia to France to Lebanon. What was your greatest success during your time with the department?
As you can imagine, young men and women apply for appointment to the State Department's Foreign Service and take what may be the world's most difficult exam because of their interest in international relations. Some also apply because of self-interest, hoping to rise to the level of ambassador. But most apply because they have a desire to make the world a better place. My various assignments gave me an opportunity for some small steps in this regard. In 1975, Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev called for the UN Economic Commission for Europe to hold high-level meetings on energy, transport, and the environment. The U.S. opposed talks on energy because the Soviet goal was to obtain Western help to develop Siberian oil and gas reserves. The Germans, then building the Rhine-Danube Canal, wanted no meeting on transport, which might propose internationalization of the canal. The British and the French, among the worst polluters, wanted no meeting on the environment. But Brezhnev's proposal having been made, my Soviet colleagues were under the gun to deliver. Work in the ECE bodies was being held up by the stalemate, so something had to be done. With support from my Scandinavian colleagues, whose lakes were being turned green by sulfur dioxide pollution, I won agreement to hold a ministerial-level meeting on environment, specifically on acid rain. The result was the first international convention on the long-range transport of air pollutants. In Geneva, I also worked with UN agencies on combating narcotic drug production in Thailand by substituting coffee plants for poppies. I also worked on providing English language training for Southeast Asian refugees, facilitating their subsequent employment in the United States.
That's quite a list of accomplishments. From your perspective, what is the role of the State Department and why is it important?
With the exception of declaring war, the Constitution grants the President responsibility for foreign policy. With the advice and consent of the Senate, he may make treaties, appoint ambassadors, and other diplomats. But presidents are rarely experts in foreign policy, so the State Department is needed to provide expertise and advice. If the Secretary of State and other department officials are able to provide such advice, there will be a check on the president who may make rash actions which will divide the U.S. from its allies and weaken its ability to achieve its goals in the country's best interests. Of course, as we have seen, the president's willingness to take such advice is essential. A diplomat should be an expert in the country with which he is dealing and a skilled negotiator. His goal must be to achieve an outcome to a dispute that is acceptable to the other country as well as to the United States. To be successful and long-lasting, the outcome must be a win-win situation, not a total American victory. We have seen what resulted from the Treaty of Versailles at the end of World War I that imposed what Germany considered to be an unjust peace. The peace treaty with Japan at the end of World War II, on the other hand, while based on unconditional surrender, provided for conditions which were acceptable to Japan. The outcome was a close alliance.
So the culture and priorities of the State Department change with every presidential administration. But what are some of the qualities that remain the same, no matter who's in the White House?
There has been agreement that foreign policy should be nonpartisan. The saying has been that disagreement should stop at the water's edge. When foreign policy has been nonpartisan, we have generally been successful.
So can you discuss some of the ways that the current State Department differs from past administrations?
The current administration has enunciated a policy of American first. America's goals must be achieved, whatever the cost to others. Such a policy is bound to fail. The president's rejection of the Paris Agreement on climate change, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the Iran nuclear agreement, his criticism of NATO, and his embrace of autocrats in Russia, North Korea, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and elsewhere have done severe damage to the U.S. role as the leader of the free world. Real cooperation is based on trust, and now trust is lacking.
So what do you think our current State Department has achieved under President Trump, and what do you think they should prioritize for the next 2 years?
The first part of your question is difficult to answer, and I don't think I shall. But let me say, for the next 2 years, a goal for U.S. foreign policy should be to reach accommodation with North Korea and Iran based on the reality that North Korea will never give up its nuclear weapons and that Iran has a right to have peaceful nuclear energy. We should try to persuade Iran and Russia to work with us to achieve peace in Syria. Such cooperation must be based on mutually acceptable outcomes, and in this regard, we should return to a more even-handed policy toward Israel and the Palestinians. In Afghanistan, we should negotiate with the Afghan government and concerned regional governments to reach a settlement which includes the Taliban in power sharing. We should work to reduce trade barriers, striving to include provisions in such agreements for improved labor conditions and environmental protection. We should welcome an increased number of immigrants and asylum seekers to the United States. Perhaps most important for the future of our planet, we should return to our role of leadership in combating climate change. We should rejoin the Paris Climate Change Agreement, the Iran Nuclear Agreement, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and demonstrate strong support for NATO. Unfortunately, none of this may be possible during the Trump administration.
Well, Mr. Springer, thank you for your incredible insights, and thank you for joining us today. This has been a valuable perspective brought to you by Roland Park Place, Baltimore City's only continuing care retirement community. Tune in next time for more lessons to learn, right here on A Valuable Perspective. For more information about Roland Park Place, visit our website at rolandparkplace.org. I'm Becky Bees.